You know, I almost said good morning. Although we hang around long enough, that might happen. We're going to convene the committee, and I want to start off by just thanking the members. My hope had been to started this meeting earlier this evening, and other things got in the way, so my apologies for that, but thank you for being here. I suspect some members haven't had dinner yet, and some may be running out to heat up some dinners, but thank you for your attendance today. We're gonna hear three bills this evening, and the intent is to move all three of those bills. But before we start, Representative Sawatsky, I think you wanted to introduce some folks who have joined us here this evening.
Members, thank you for tonight. This is a fun night for special education. and I would like to recognize some of the members of Education Minnesota, as well as teachers from throughout the state of Minnesota. So thank you for attending tonight. Okay.
Yes, welcome to the committee. So with that, we're going to begin with House File 2476, Representative Dabney.
Thank you much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the House File 2426 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance.
And Representative Dabney, is it 2476 or 26?
2476.
76. Very well.
My apologies if I misspoke.
That's quite all right. It's, it's 7 o'clock. And that's true. So Representative Dabney moves House File 2476. And Representative Dabney, just if you can just hold off for a second. I've been reminded we have a stack of minutes that we need to approve here.
Quite right.
And so we actually have about 5 minutes. And I'm going to start with you, Representative Urusso, because I think you were at this meeting, the meeting of July 9th, 2013. This was out at Crosswinds. I wonder if you would be so kind as to move those minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Good. Motion to adopt the minutes of July 9th, 2013. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Very good. Representative Leidinger, I wonder if you would be so kind as to move the February 18th minutes.
So moved, sir.
Thank you. There is a motion to adopt the minutes of February 18th. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative, boy, this is fun. I get to pick on Representative Sawatsky. Would you be so kind as to move the February 20th minutes?
So moved.
Motion to adopt the minutes of February 20th. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And Representative Briner, would you do me the favor of moving the minutes of February 27th?
So moved.
There's a motion to adopt the minutes of February 27th. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. And Representative Nornes, last but not least, the minutes from the other day, March 4th, if you would be so kind.
I finally found it. Thank you. I'll move that.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. There's a motion to adopt the minutes of March 4th. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Thank you, members. Representative Dabney has moved House File 2476.
That's correct. Representative Dabney. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Good evening. The House File 2476 is a product of the Seclusion and Restraint Task Force. It makes a few changes, starting with the already required restrictive procedures plan that school districts must develop. Adds a requirement that they describe in their plan and that's available to the public, how they will train staff on de-escalation techniques. Just a reminder that the term restrictive procedures applies to the use of seclusion and restraints in schools with special education students. It moves back from March 1st of this year to February 1st of next year, the date by which stakeholders must annually recommend goals to the Commission of Education for reducing the use of restrictive procedures. Note that doesn't have any impact on the treatment of children in the schools. That's a reporting deadline from grown-ups to grown-ups. It additionally allows the use of reasonable force, but requires districts to collect and submit to the commissioner summary data on the use of reasonable force in their schools. In addition, there is an appropriation in the bill, but since this is policy committee, we'll focus, I thought we'd just focus on the policy dimensions. That's a brief overview of the bill. With me tonight is Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of the National Association of the Mentally Ill in Minnesota. My apologies.
Good evening, Ms. Abderholden.
Good evening, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. This is one of those bills that we got everyone to agree with, which is always a good thing, especially when it's, you know, been a difficult issue in the past to deal with. Last legislative session, you asked for the commissioner to bring together stakeholders to look at how were we doing in reducing the use of seclusion restraints in our schools and what kind of recommendations did we have. We did go through the bill. We decided there were a couple things that we thought needed clarification. In terms of adding the de-escalation techniques of all the things that you can do to reduce the use of those restrictive procedures, de-escalation techniques are key. And when teachers and staff learn that, they learn not to touch the child, which could make them, you know, if they're tactically sensitive, you know, kind of jump up and really learn how to kind of calm and talk kids down. So we decided that was a really important thing to put in there. The second thing is when we want to keep moving to, of course, we're going to be eliminating the use of prone restraint and really reducing the rest of them, the way that you do that is by really looking at your data. So we said, you know, this is great that we came together this year, but we should keep going and really look at every year, how are we doing in terms of reducing those numbers? What are the barriers to reducing them? What other things can we learn from other school districts who've been very successful in reducing them? And just kind of that overall goal. The reason to report the use of reasonable force is that in 2015, when we banned prone restraints, what we didn't want to have happen is schools to then look to using reasonable force or police instead. And so we didn't want there to be any unintended consequences. We already collect the data on bringing police into the schools, and so we wanted to be able to know if you're using reasonable force that could look like it would for a physical hold, then you need to report that. Just so that we're kind of tracking that data. And the reason to pass it this year is so that we have a baseline and kind of know about that. And second, while this isn't a funding committee, I just want to mention that the funding for this is really important. When we look at our data from this last year, 10 children accounted for 42% of the use of prone restraints. So we thought if we could get some additional dollars to really, for those few kids, to say, what is going on? Do we need some additional experts beyond what a school can fund? Really look at what's happening with those particular children so that we can really get rid of the use of those restraints. We thought that would be a really good idea. So again, everyone is, and I have not heard of anyone who is opposed to this bill. We worked hard in trying to get agreements, and I think this will continue us down the goal of really reducing the use of these procedures.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. We also have a Ms. Connie Hayes who had asked to testify. Good evening, Ms. Hayes.
Good evening, members. My name is Connie Hayes, superintendent at Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District. And I sit on the stakeholder group to represent the voice of the three intermediate superintendents. I certainly feel the discussions coming out of the stakeholder group are moving us forward in a very positive fashion, and I've really enjoyed the collegial conversations that we've had. We all understand each other's perspectives better, and we're accomplishing some great problem solving through our conversations. And all of us believe that we can create better outcomes for our students. Through efforts from many fronts, the three intermediates are making good progress towards the reduction of the use of prone restraint. And I have to make a little plug for the Safe Schools Levy while I'm up here. That Safe Schools Levy is just integral to our capacity to be able to train our staff in de-escalation skills. And the report does tell you that you did increase the Safe Schools Levy last year, and that's almost true, because you didn't increase it for the intermediate school districts. In fact, in the calculation of the change of the student weighting, we actually lost a dollar. So we're hoping to get a correction of that during this session. Also, all three of the intermediate districts have been working through a pretty significant plan of improving our facilities. We've been able to demonstrate that specifically designed facilities really make a difference for the students that have very complex needs. And we've talked a lot about the school-linked mental health grants. That has been a great investment for the students that we serve at the intermediates, and we really appreciate your support. We still have a long ways to go, but we are really happy to report progress is being made. We also support the data, the collection of the data on the reasonable force, as Sue mentioned a moment ago. As the intermediates, we are uneasy about the impending timeline when we will no longer be able to use prone restraint in our districts. The three superintendents talk about 5 to 15% of the students that we serve in our programs are really very highly complex, and those are the ones that we tend to use the prone restraint with. Our concern is that once that is removed, we are concerned that we will have to turn to some police intervention. And when we have to use that, we believe it's very, very stressful for these students. So we try very hard to avoid that kind of experience for our students. Lastly, we do support, obviously, the appropriation for districts that are experiencing the highest prone restraints. And I have to take my hat off to some of my colleagues from around the state. This isn't just for the intermediate districts. There are a number of other regional centers across the state of Minnesota that serve these very complex level four kids. Rochester, St. Cloud, Moorhead, just to name a few. So $250,000 doesn't really go very far when we're talking about the students with such high needs. But it is a good start, and we hope that you can support that. So in partnership with the school districts and the Department of Human Services, we feel like that appropriation can start to open some doors for the expertise that we need for these students. And lastly, I'll say I've been at the intermediate district now for 8 years, and when I got there and I saw the complexity of these students, I thought, you know, there's got to be somebody out there who has the answer for the students that have such high needs. But I quickly learned there isn't a Mayo Clinic for the services that these students need. We can't call up an expert in the field and get the answer that unlocks the keys for some of these students. But I do believe with some resources and bringing our expertise together, we can begin to find some ways to unlock the keys and the doors that we need to with these students. And we are making progress in that direction, but we will continue to need some pretty extensive support from the legislature now and into the future so that the needs of these kids and these families can move forward. So thank you very much for the opportunity tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes. Are there any questions? So I want you to stay there for a second. Any questions from members, from Ms. Hayes or from Mr. Adleholden? Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, I'm curious. So if you cannot do the prone restraint in the future, and you said you might have to call in the police, what do you do in the interim before the police arrive? Can you describe that process, and is there any safety issues involved in that time period between the time that you don't restrain them and the police arrive?
Ms. Hayes.
Yes, thank you, members. Each story is different. And all of our staff that have to intervene when a student is in crisis have pretty extensive skills in de-escalation. But sometimes we simply can't de-escalate the behavior, and the student continues with their crisis behavior. Sometimes what happens then is they start to destroy some of the property around them until the police arrive. But when we're able to use a prone restraint in our district, we've been able to do it very safely. Only those who are highly trained can apply that prone restraint. So, you know, we're hoping that maybe we'll have some additional conversation with the stakeholder group about the use of prone restraint in programs like ours. Having said that, it's not where we want to go. but we are concerned about the safety of the student, number one, the safety of the students around the, that particular student, and the safety of our staff. We do have a lot of injuries in our programs, kind of comes with the territory, but you know, the more we train our staff, we're able to continue to move forward and, you know, de-escalating behaviors more quickly than we have in the past. So we have a lot of growth ahead of us, and like I said, your support has really been helpful. But police intervention is always our last resort.
Thank you. And of course, again, a reminder, the bill extends out the limited use of prone restraints for another year. So you hopefully won't be having to cross over that threshold anytime soon. And so the logic here is that we're going to be collecting some data information that might help us to as we continue to unroll new effective practices, and at the same time make an appropriation so that we can have some direct assistance provided by the MDE to districts that are facing those large numbers of issues. Is that the first time we've appropriated something like that for this? I'm seeing a nodding of the head. Yes. Okay. Right. Very well. Representative Dabney.
While it's never wise to correct the chair, I just want to clarify that this bill does nothing with that August 1st, 2015 deadline for the prohibition of prone restraint. That was work that we did last year. This bill, I would say, puts some more supports around districts moving towards that and adapting to that deadline coming up on August 1st of 2015.
I stand properly corrected, said Nappy. It's important we know what we're voting on.
A gentleman and a scholar.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify in the audience for or against the bill? Are there any further questions? Representative Dabney.
Thank you much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the attention. I appreciate the support to moving this forward and providing some additional supports to both children and staff in our schools as we go forward towards that August 1st deadline of next year. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2476 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance.
Members, Representative Dabney moves House File 2476 be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney. Ms. Abderholden, Ms. Hayes. Oh, okay. So next on the agenda, we're going to hear an overview of the recommendations from the Special Education Caseloads Task Force. And I believe we're joined by, I'll tell you what, I'll just have people come forward and introduce themselves. And perhaps, Commissioner, why don't we begin with you? And And members, you do have a copy of the report in your packets. I suspect you may want to, or the testifiers might want you to refer to that as they issue their recommendations to us. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Minnesota Department of Education. Another one of the task forces that I worked with this summer is the one that you're going to be hearing the report on here shortly. Your charge to this task force was to deal with basically two issues. One is the caseload statute or rule that we currently have and review that, as well as to identify state rules that do not currently align with statute that are within in the special ed area. So the task force took on both of these tasks as part of their responsibilities. Within the direction to the task force, you indicated that we should have at least 10 members, and they needed to be equally representative of like practitioners such as special administrators, teachers, as well as parents and others. I have with me here tonight, oh, by the way, the other thing is that this, all of these appointments came through the open meeting law, open appointments law. So all these individuals who served on the task force did apply through the open appointments process and were selected from that group. And then we did the balancing between parents and advocates as well as the practitioners. The task force began its meetings in September, completed its work in January, or late February, because we had to cancel a meeting in January due to the cold, but we did complete our work on time, and the report before you is the product of that work by the task force members. You have a bill before you, and as you get to the bill, there's one technical thing, and there's also a question we have, but I'll deal with that at the time you look at the bill. Who I have with me tonight are co-chairs. These were designated by the task force after our first meetings, and they help us facilitate the work of the task force. To my left here, I have Todd Travis, who is a special ed director. He is with the Midwest Special Ed Cooperative out of Morris, so we had out-state representation. And to my right, I have a parent, Don McNeil. I'd like to thank them for their efforts. They were very helpful in bringing forth the recommendation. This was a difficult task. I'd also like to acknowledge Representative Swatsky, who spent a lot of time with the task force as well. One of the things that our members found as they dug into this, there were a lot of other issues that were contributing to some of the concerns, and in particular paperwork and some of the requirements, and you're going to hear another bill later tonight that deals with that. The committee spent at least two or three meetings trying to dig down into some of these concerns that were driving their workloads, and some of the recommendations that you'll hear tonight are tied to those discussions that took place. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to my co-chairs. I will be available to answer questions as needed. I also have other staff from the department, staff who deal with rulemaking, and staff that deal with our special ed program. So if there are technical questions, they're here to help our co-chairs, but also to answer anything that you might have that comes up. With this, who's going to start? Okay, Mr. Travis will start, and I will let them take over and explain the task force work and their recommendations.
Thank you for the introduction, Commissioner, and welcome, gentlemen. And before you start, let me just, because I might forget to say this later, let me just extend our gratitude for your work in this area, for being good citizens, to volunteer your time and your efforts to help shape good public policy. We greatly appreciate it. Mr. Travis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rose kind of laid out some of the background things that I was going to talk about. I'd like to say that our first several meetings, department staff did a very nice job of laying out pertinent and background information to help. People were coming from various backgrounds to help everyone's understanding, and which allowed us, I think, to come to better decisions. Rose was particularly helpful in her work, I think, behind the scenes, coordinating everything and making sure all those meetings went very smoothly. As Rose stated, the main issues that we wrestled with on the task force were centered around paperwork, also trying to define caseloads versus workloads. Some people view those much the same, some people view those differently. Also, a considerable amount of conversation around teacher supply in special education, and the fact that caseloads are high in many cases because we have a number of unfilled positions around the state. And then we also talked a little bit about just flexibility and different staffing models and how important those were depending on which district you're in, outstate or metro, depending on size and those kinds of things. Another point of discussion was recognizing what's happening in other states. About half the states in the union have a prescriptive state policy or statute that talks about caseload, and about half the states leave that to local district policy decision makers. It seemed that from the data that we were supplied, there was a trend toward moving away from a state level statute on that and moving more to local decision making. Having said that, I'm going to quickly run through the recommendations that we made regarding the caseload, and then my fellow co-chair is going to talk about more with the statute and rule alignment. So our first recommendation was to keep a caseload statute in place. Second recommendation, the current statute talks about 50% or more of time with special education students spent with a special education teacher. Our recommendation was to move that to 60%. The reason for that change was 60% aligns more with our federal settings and federal statute, and it's just a closer alignment, more modern language, if you will. The third recommendation is very similar, moving again to 60%. Fourth recommendation was simply to replace the term program support assistant with the term paraprofessional, essentially again just modernizing the language that's involved. Fifth recommendation, for pupils who receive 60% or less of special education in their instructional day, the district, individual school districts must establish a board policy to determine caseload or workload limits, and then it gives some more specificity there. Recommendation six essentially says that under special circumstances, maybe related to the previous testimony, for students that have particularly high needs in the area of behavior or mental health, districts could choose to have a lower caseload. Recommendation seven was one area that we really did not come to consensus on, and that was trying to define what caseload means, and so some more work may need to be done there. Recommendation eight deals specifically then with a definition of workload. And recommendation nine is essentially a recommendation to consider the following issues: to look at streamlining paperwork, to encourage differentiated staffing models, and to utilize technology and other professional development to help support special education teachers.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Travis. Let me just pause for a second and just ask, you know, generally, so when you add up the nine recommendations, and it looks like all of our basically recommendations to the rule, so what does that add up to? What changes, if you will, in the field and in practice, what we anticipate as a result of these recommendations?
I think essentially the main changes would be the modernization, if you will, of the statute to keep up with current language that matches federal and matches what's happening in the field, terms that are commonly used. The addition of the additional recommendation that local districts would have a policy addressing special education workload, caseload, and then the provision that highlights that under special circumstances, districts may need to have smaller caseload limits to help some of our neediest students. And I think that was kind of tied to the previous testimony.
Very well, thank you. Mr. McNeil?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Good evening. My name's Don McNeil. I'm an attorney by day, managing partner of a firm in Minneapolis. I'm a dad 24/7 of three children. Megan, who's 24, has Williams syndrome. If you're familiar with Downs, it's kind of like it, but it's not. She's a outstanding product of 196. We have some of the teachers here that are responsible for the success that she has enjoyed in her life. She's 24 and works at Blue Cross University, still lives at home. I have a 20-year-old who's a junior at Carleton College, a pre-med student and a decathlete. I have a 16-year-old with classic autism, which is not related to Williams, and only God will tell us how we were blessed with two children in our family. Classic autism is one that does not need a doctor. He's the one, when you consider prone restraint, he's one of those kids. so it means a lot to our family and what the legislature decides on those particular issues. So I volunteered to serve on this task force as an attorney to help do an alignment of some inconsistencies between the statutes and the rules. In your report before you, you'll find 20 recommendations that we have identified through work with the Department of Education to find inconsistencies. And I only give you one because there's so many in here, but I can tell you they almost virtually unanimously passed through the task force after discussion among all the teachers and the advocates and the special ed administrators, the school board association that was all present at our task force meetings. Here's one example. In statute, the transition process starts at grade 9. So a parent receives notice from the school district that your child is going to graduate someday. We need to talk about what's going to happen after they leave the school system, after their education is done. In the rules, however, it says it's grade 9 or age 14, whichever comes first. Well, it's a simple issue, but it's an inconsistency. And in the field, it creates a conversation for every child receiving special ed. What does that mean? Well, we're making a recommendation to clarify that inconsistency and change the rule to be consistent with the statute. So we're asking through the bill to have an expedited rulemaking procedure so it will clean that up. There are other examples that are in our report, 19 more recommendations of that nature that we think will clean up and make the special ed process a little bit more consistent and clearly understood in the field. If I may answer any further questions, I'd be happy to. I can tell you it was an excellent task force. Everybody worked hard, and we think we've made progress and make recommendations that will be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. McNeil. We do have a couple of questions. Representative Benson? Oh, that's a different list. Do we have a list? Questions, members? Representative Lighting.
Thank you. Is it the intention to go through every recommendation at this hearing?
We can certainly have members dive into questions about the recommendations. I believe we're going to have a bill that's going to align with, it's not clear to me whether it aligns with all the recommendations or some, but perhaps you can ask your question and then we can figure out how to best answer it in terms of who and what.
Mr. Chair, we can certainly go through each of the recommendations. A lot of them are very technical in nature. In the report itself, especially on the alignment of rule and statute, we gave a rationale, and so we could go step by step through that if that's your desire. Mr. McNeil and I talked about some of that, especially as it relates to the alignment, and we didn't know if the committee wanted that much detail, because that would take some time. But for the most part, I don't think the substantive ones are very minimal. We made one example, one that came in very late. Mr. McNeil had some conversations about one of the requirements about a hearing officer. We made some adjustment there where it did not require that it be a lawyer, that there are other people with hearing exam that could serve in that role that we would not necessarily require that it be an attorney. That one was probably a little bit more substantive, but Mr. McNeil did go and we did some work with others in the field who are advocates for kids and see if that would what their feelings were about it. But for the most part, I also have Justine Forsythe from our agency here who worked with Mr. McNeil and helped develop the rationale and did all the work on identifying everything that we could find in rule and statute that did not align. At the same time that we were meeting, the Restrictive Procedures Task Force was meeting, our group was meeting, and what we tried to do is align our stuff with what they were doing, and so that was also brought into some of these recommendations, mainly statutory citations and references that may not have cross-referenced appropriately. And so I think substantively, I don't know that there's a lot of major stuff in there except for making sure that we clarified whether rule or whether law would take precedent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wasn't advocating to go through it all, I guess I wanted to just understand where we were going to go, because if that's the case, then I just have some general questions I'd like to ask. Paging through it, looks like there's changes in the ADD-ADHD arena. Can you just briefly go through some of those changes and what we're doing with that classification or category, please?
Can you go to a specific recommendation?
Well, yes. I'm sorry. I've lost my page now. Well, for instance, we talked about it, recommendation 11. It looks like a diagnosis, and I'm wondering whether have we done different diagnoses of ADD, ADHD for children with disability than when we went through. And I'm just paging through this now. I noticed there was another one, recommendation. Drawn, which mentions it as well. Well, I think the first one that comes to mind is that we made any changes.
Mr. Chair, I could address it. Recommendation number 11. So it's not that we're changing anything substantively in the statute. What we're doing is changing to make it consistent with the statute so that we have language that permits a diagnosis of ADD or ADHD by a licensed physician or other advanced practice nurse or licensed psychologist to the rule, which was not included in the rule, so there was inconsistency between the statute and the rule, and the statute worked better. So we wanted the rule to be consistent with what the statute provided.
Purpose of lighting.
Then, well, I appreciate that. Are you making some recommendations to come closer to what the rules have said? And then now I'm asking that across all the recommendations, or are you staying with the statutes in your recommendations?
Mr. Chair, I think in all these cases we're moving rule to match statute. And my understanding is that statute already has deference, and so that would be what would be followed. But what has happened in the field is, for example, if myself as an administrator was looking at the statute and I had a fellow administrator or a parent or possibly an advocate that was looking at the rule, we could be at a misunderstanding and they would say, well, I'm following the rule and I'm following the statute, and it just causes some turmoil in the field. And so these were relatively non-controversial, as Mr. McNeil stated, and should really help everyone involved in special education have a clear understanding of what we need to be doing.
And there are, as we look, members, to page 17, then you've got the last four recommendations apparently are recommendations to amend existing statute. And Commissioner, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I suspect some of that may be in the bill, the bills that we'll be looking at a little bit later.
Mr. Chair, again, part of what our job was here was to eliminate any confusion. And if you look at them, the rule has been in place for a while, and in some instances hasn't been updated. I'll give you the one example that Mr. Travis talked about. Paraprofessional, we use the word that we use is not defined anywhere when we talk about the caseload rule. But we do have a definition in the rule for paraprofessional. So the question was, why don't we update our rule to be consistent with what our practice is out there, and also the fact that we do have a definition for paraprofessional where we do not have for the other term that was being used. And so those are the kind of things we looked at. Actually, there are probably a few more things we might have looked at cleaning up, but there was a little less... we use terminology a lot in education that we never define, and so that then leaves it to the local districts or people implementing as to what do we mean by that. We did talk about a workload definition. We tried to see if we could come up with a caseload definition, and we went through statutes. We went through other states. We even looked at caseloads for attorneys, for nursing homes, or whatever. There's a lot of people who use the term caseload, but to come with a clear definition of what that means in everybody's mind, even within the area of special ed, that was much more difficult for us to reach consensus on. But we use the term, we say we have to deal with it, but we never really define it. The committee did define workload because there were more aspects to workload. Part of the problem with some of these definitions is we have so many different, we have different staffing patterns out in the field. If you're a smaller district, you may staff in one way. If you're a larger district, you may have more staff. We have, in some districts, you have an assessment coordinator. They may be doing all the assessment and then helping out the teachers who are delivering the day-to-day services. In other districts, they don't have that luxury. They have a fewer number of staff. We also have, a case manager. Some districts have folks that just manage cases. So how do you develop some definitions and criteria that will apply equally in a Rosemont Apple Valley as it does to the cooperatives that Mr. Travis deals with? He has many small districts, and so for us to put in place a hard and fast requirements did not seem appropriate under the circumstances of what we have going out in the field.
Representative Leidinger?
No, I'm satisfied with the process and everything. Maybe there's other questions, specific questions, but I didn't have any more on this. Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Well, again, Mr. McNeil and Mr. Travis, thank you for the work. Thank you for your commitment to these issues. And I suspect it won't be the last time we'll be hearing from you and your thoughts on this issue. So thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I would like to end. This paperwork issue was really, we really delved into that quite extensively. I know you have another bill, and I know Representative Swatsky is looking at this issue. I think the committee had some concern that this was our purview, but I will acknowledge that the teachers and the staff and the others on this, finding a way to make this more workable so that we can spend more time with the kids is really, really very important, and we need to find some ways of doing that. So, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Members, so we'll move on to House File 2693, Representative Sawatsky. And let me make sure we get our motions correct. This is going to go up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Very well. Representative Sawatsky moves that House File 2693 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Sawatsky. And you have, I believe you have some testifiers as well.
Excuse me?
Do you have some testifiers? Looks like someone's coming up there with you. Very well.
We're on House File 2693, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for hearing House File 2693. I'm Mary Swatsky, and I'm bringing this bill forward. As a result of the 2014 special education caseload and rule alignment force, which met seven times over the past 8 months, the task force proposes to make statutory and rule changes. And we've already heard from Rose, from the Hermanson, the assistant to the commissioner, the co-chairs Todd Travis and Don McNeil, and thank you for your work. They've walked through a little bit of the ideas and the implementations that they would like to see in implementing technical statutory changes that were recommended by this task force. Are there any questions that we could field from you and at this time?
So, Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swatsky, does your bill cover all the recommendations of the task force, or is there a selection of certain priority recommendations?
Representative Swatsky.
Of the rule alignment, Chair, of the rule alignment and statutory rule changes, that I'll defer that to Rose.
Yeah, and I believe Representative Breiner is referring to, in our document, we've got four recommendations that were meant to be recommendations for statutory change. And so I think what she's asking is the bill reflect those four? or some of those four?
Okay, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding of the bill, by giving us statutory, or by giving us authority to do rulemaking, what we would be doing is we would be going through expedited rulemaking process to make the changes in rule either by referencing statute or maybe not eliminating a reference and rule that's covered by statute, and that would all be taken care of in the expedited rulemaking process. Now, having said that, there is one technical change that that we'll need to make on line 232. We changed the word assessment to to evaluation. The and should be an or, because that was it's assessment or reassessment, should be evaluation or reevaluation. So that's just a technical change that our staff, I had our staff go through the bill. One recommendation that was not included as we went through the bill is recommendation 27. And I would guess part of the recommendation number 27 on page 17, part of what's happening there is because we have removed the aversive and deprivation procedures from that statute, the only thing left deals with removal by a police officer. And I'm assuming maybe your staff decided that's no longer the purview of this committee because the title no longer applies, because it no longer applies to education. And so a recommendation number 7 we did not determine was in this bill, and I'm assuming staff made some decision about whether we should be doing it in this committee or not. But I don't know what the reasoning for that was.
So, Commissioner, so just so I'm clear, so the bill, the bill only speaks to the rule recommendations.
No, there are
in
some
the report. Is that correct,
Mr. Chair? And I think Ms. Larson can help you. There are other things as well, and so maybe Ms. Larson can help us out here.
Very well, Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, the bill that Representative Sawatsky has authored, 2693, is a combination of two things. The first sections through sections 1 to 4 are the statutory changes recommended in the report. The one change that Assistant Commissioner Hermanson mentioned has to do with changing a headnote. The reviser already has authority to change headnotes without any statutory direction, so that's being taken care of and it's not in the document. But the other changes to statute, all of them that were recommended in the report, are reflected in the bill. In addition, the last section gives the department expedited rulemaking authority to make the specific recommendations for rule changes that you heard explained previously.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Leiter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so thank you, Ms. Larson, for that. If we look at recommendation 9, you know, there. First of all, you go through a lot of the recommendations. They have pretty spelled out, explicit rationale behind it. But then you come upon something like number 9, there should be, and then it talks about further consideration and streamlining the paperwork requirements. I know it was addressed a little bit about it, but then encourage use of differentiated staffing models, utilizing technology, improving professional development, and then it stops. And
Mr. Chair, Representative, these were issues that the task force felt were left on the table. This would not be incorporated in rulemaking. These dealt with the committee feeling there needed to be further discussion around those issues, and they wanted to capture it, but it's not that they're recommending that there be anything adopted in rule related to that recommendation. It was just the acknowledgement that further consideration as we go forward need to be given to these issues. The paperwork one, you're going to have a bill a little bit later that talks about that. They felt that we needed, because I mentioned earlier about the differentiated staffing models where you might have an assessment coordinator or you might have a casework that, you know, is there, they didn't feel like they wanted to mandate anything, but they acknowledged that maybe districts should be using some differentiated staffing models to allow greater time for more direct services to kids, but they did not come forward with any specific recommendations. And then utilizing technology, there were several recommendations. This is more implementation as things go forward, whether it's assistive technology for kids, but primarily about how we track records, transfer records, and how we deal with record keeping as it relates to special ed case load and paperwork. And then finally, we had some testimony from teachers and others that indicated that many times they were filling out paperwork without understanding who was requiring this paperwork and why they were doing it, because they were not knowledgeable about maybe specifics and statutes or rule, and they wanted to have more understanding of what requirements, what was going on, why they needed to do the paperwork, and then also how to deal with students with specific needs. So they felt there needed to be a greater emphasis in staff development or professional development, both on the paperwork side and doing that as well as dealing with students. So these are very generic, broad recommendations that they were four critical issues that the task force felt needed further discussion and clarification. But these would not be going into rule.
We just had in, do you address those in the bill?
No, Mr. Chair, they're not addressed in the bill. They're issues for further study and further maybe deliberations down the road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf or against the bill? All right. Well, then. Oh, and is there Representative Erdahl? What about this issue?
Mr. Chairman, have you given any consideration to lane this bill over so that we have more time to examine the rule recommendations?
I'm sorry.
I was suggesting that perhaps it might be good to lay the bill over so that we would have more time to look at the rule recommendations.
Commissioner Erdahl, or Commissioner Hull, I am tired. Okay. Yeah, Commissioner, I just tripled your salary. Yes, I get it. Representative Erdahl, I'll obviously ask the author of the bill that question, but you know, quite frankly, given that we've got a policy deadline in a couple of weeks, and this has got to travel to at least one other committee, and then probably circle back to finance, I suspect. I think for us to lay this over at this point might be might spell doom for this bill. It's just sort of the time constraints that we're facing. I certainly do want to, you know, respect your desire to spend a lot more time, you know, with these recommendations. The recommendations were issued a while ago. I'll admit I've not read them through carefully. I've had lots of other things to read as well. But I think perhaps a better tack might be to work with Representative Sawatsky between now and the next committee and or second committee to work with her with any concerns that might pop up in your mind as you're reading through these.
Well, the intention is to doom the bill.
I you know, it's the unfortunate nature of this session right now. Members, we have 71 bills that have been referred to this committee. We have 2 weeks to hear them. I don't think we're going to hear 71 bills, but we're certainly going to hear quite a bit of them. Yeah. Any other questions, comments? Very well. Representative Sawatsky, there was some language, or the commissioner did mention a possible need for language on page 2 of line 232. My recommendation would be that you work with the commissioner, mark that, and bring that issue up in the following committee if this bill moves forward. Very well. With that, Representative Sawatsky renews her motion that House File 2693 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sawatzky. Representative Sawatzky moves House File 2568 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
Yes, Chair.
Representative Sawatzky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of this committee. I think you have just, I'm not wanting to belittle anybody's intelligence with special education, but I think you've just experienced the frustration that a lot of people experience every day because it is so complicated, and I've heard this for the last 7 months, and it is still complicated, and it's part of my life for the past 29 years. So I acknowledge your wanting more understanding, Representative, but, you know, it's kind of like school finance. I think probably one person in the state of Minnesota knows how to do it. So
you're sitting right here, right to my right over here.
With that.
No, he's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
And you haven't called him yet.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and members of the committee for allowing me to speak on behalf of House File 2568. I'm Mary Sawatzky. I've been a special education teacher for 29 years and have experienced many changes in this field. House File 2568 aims to uphold the integrity of special education due process. With your help and the stakeholders who are advocating for our students, I want the best bill to pass through this legislative body. This past year, a task force convened, and the special education beast was brought back to life. This bill will not address every issue in special education today. This is only the beginning. The bill aims to address two of the six legislative auditors' recommendations. The first one is to improve understanding of compliance requirements. And two, continue efforts to streamline paperwork and encourage efficiencies. This bill and the statewide online system it creates aims to, one, reduce redundancy so our teachers have more time to spend with our students. Two, provide consistent forms so our families can better understand how we aim to help their child. Three, facilitate a uniform system for school districts to better understand the compliance system from the Minnesota Department of Education. Four, provide a meaningful college experience for our student teachers as they could be trained on this system while still in college. Five, aims to retain our special education teachers by addressing one of the most frustrating aspects of their job. In December at noon, the day before winter break, Education Minnesota sent out a survey to past and present special education teachers. By the end of that school day, over 500 teachers had responded. You have the compiled data in front of you, but I'm just going to make some comments about some of the findings. 98.4% of the special education teachers are moderately to extremely frustrated with paperwork. 21% of our teachers are spending more than 9 hours a week doing paperwork outside of school hours. That does not include grading, papers, planning, etc. 43.4% of our teachers that left special education cite paperwork as the biggest reason they left. And the most frustrating part of the paperwork, according to our teachers, is that it takes time away from being with our students. St. Paul, we have a problem. We asked the teachers what they thought of creating a single system for the state, and 73.3% of our teachers supported such efforts. You will be listening to our teachers by supporting this bill. I hope you can support this bill that aims to simplify, clarify, and reduce redundancy in our special education due process system. At this time, I will answer any questions or also offer up an author's amendment.
Representative Sawatzky, why don't we take up your author's amendments and then we'll get into question and answers. So Representative Sawatzky moves the A1 amendment. Representative Sawatzky, tell us briefly what the amendment does. just like that. Oh, I see. Very well. Representative Swatsky, I get it. A1 amendment is going to help us keep moving this bill along, quite frankly. And so, members, I would urge your support of the A1 amendment. Discussion? Representative Creech.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. And just a clarification as I'm reading through the amendment, on the 1.5 of the amendment, page 3, line 27, it says, delete commissioner and insert creating and inserting, comma, customizing. So as I'm trying to put that in the bill, and that would read the integrating on customizing, comma, and integrating. That doesn't seem, am I missing something?
Let me ask our legal counsel to walk us through the language on line 27.
On the H256A1, I believe Representative Cresha has a question about page 1, line 5 of the amendment and how to see what's happening.
Correct. I'm just looking for the proper wording.
Okay. So on page 3, line 27, delete the word commissioner and delete the word creating and insert integrating, customizing. So the line would read on integrating, customizing, and sustaining. So the direction is that the commissioner must consult with qualified experts who are listed there on integrating, customizing, and sustaining this system.
Representative Creason.
Thank you, Chairman. So I just, okay, so if I read this correctly, and I don't mean to be anal, but, well, yes, I do, but.
We're writing law, Representative.
The, right, all right. And commissioner is gone. How about the word on?
No. Mr. Chairman, Larson. Members, on remains.
Okay, so it'll say the, and where is the integrating, where is the, where does that, where do those words actually fit into the sentence? Am I missing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Creech.
Could you read the final product, and then I could just write that, perhaps?
Yeah. When you're deleting, creating, you're substituting, integrating, customizing for creating. So it would be integrating, customizing, and sustaining.
I think, Representative Cresha, your question has to do with the word the, followed by the word on. Is that
correct? There's nothing in there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We go from an article to a preposition.
Mr. Chair.
Hold on a second. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, if you look on page 3, line 26, the end of that line is being deleted. So on page 3, line 26,
okay.
Delete to regularly advise on an ongoing basis the.
Got it.
Krisha, you and I both fell for that.
Correct. Thank you. And that's why I asked for the clarification, so thank you.
Thank you. Members, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Swatsky. Oh, you wanted to stand for questions, is that correct? And then perhaps let me do this. If there's anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on the bill, if they can come forward at this point, that'd be terrific. I thought I saw you up here earlier.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jesse Montagna. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Education.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you. I have been working with a couple of stakeholder groups. I received input from them. I've also been in communication with four other states that have gone through this process and are at various stages. Some of them have fully implemented a system and are in the process of revising. Others are just starting. The department agrees that this is something that's very necessary. As we met with teachers, we think that it would be very beneficial to have one consistent process, and we have that confirmed by the four states that we have been communicating with. But we do have some concerns about the timelines based on what we have learned with the other states. We think this needs to be done, but if we're going to do it, we need to do it correctly. We need to make sure that as we roll it out, it works. I have had experience with processes where the timelines were not realistic, and when we rolled it out, we had some failures that did not bode well with districts and staff. So if we're going to do this, we really need to do it correctly and make sure that it is a system that is user-friendly to teachers and ends up in making sure that we accomplish the goals. So we'd be happy to work with the representative with respect to the timelines that would ensure that we have a product that is exactly what we envision.
Representative Leidinger, followed by Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for testifying. Has anybody come to your department and said, we don't want to do this, we don't want everybody, all people that have disabilities to be put into the computer system and be tracked? Has anybody come to the department and said, we don't want this to happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thus far, no.
And this
Mr.
staff...
Leidinger.
Thank you, Mr. When did this research piece come out? Representative Swatsky. Mr. Chair, Representative,
Education Minnesota posted it December 19th, 2013.
Thank you.
Representative Leidinger.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if there's anybody in the audience that is going to speak against this or anybody is. I have a difficult time. I have a difficult time. This comes out, and the next thing that's going to happen is we're just going to give the department permission to go ahead and create a brand new thing, brand new system, and we don't have anybody really looking at this. We're kind of giving a lot of authority to the department to go ahead and fix this problem, and we're not taking much time at all to research this. That's my concern. I wish there was somebody that would be able to say, hey, we should be cautioned here, somebody speak against it, so I can hear if there's any opposition. I don't know if there's any opposition. It disturbs me when you want to give that much authority, that much power in this area, special ed, and the next thing you know, you've got everybody in the computer system, and all their IEP plans are there. And I don't think they're currently that way. I think they're handwritten. No. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair.
I think we have people who really know about this.
Mr. Leidinger, you might have 40 or 50 people testifying here in a second.
Well, I know I'll probably not get up. Well, you understand my concerns, Mr. Chair. That's what I was...
Representative Leidinger, we will certainly make sure that there's time for testimony from anyone in the audience on this or any other issue that you raise. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How long has the Department of Education recognized that paperwork for special ed teachers is a horrendous burden?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a topic that's been debated. I know last year we recognized it as maybe it was time for us to start looking at what are the options around the process that is involved in the IEP and all the various steps and components, and how could they be simplified so that teachers would have more time to teach, spend in the classroom, so that the goal doesn't end up being making sure that I meet the timelines at the expense of teaching children, so that I don't end up putting my district in the possibility of a litigation. The department started by getting feedback from two stakeholder groups. In the meantime, we've also been in communication with a number of states, because if we think that this is something that would, it is timely as we begin to also look at a system that could eventually be aligned with monitoring, meet all the compliance issues, especially as we're looking at the U.S. Department of Education moving towards more of a result-based system that would also start to look at, what are the interventions that have been used with these students, as students move from one district to the next. So we've done some research, but I do think that we would like the opportunity to put together a full proposal to show what are the components and what are the timelines and how could we move forward and make sure that this is what is needed and would be useful.
Representative Yaruso.
I just wanted to comment that since it's going to civil law, we will have a thorough opportunity to vet any data practice concerns there.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had spent some time with my special ed, some of my special ed directors in my district, and we actually went over to North Dakota and compared, talked to directors there, and they follow this entire, the federal statutes. They don't do what we do in paperwork, and that was the real conversation, was the paperwork. But my concern is, while computer work is, we consider that to be speedier at some points, I wonder if when we put all this documentation in, if we're still not, you know, we don't have paper, but are we still filling out all those reports? Are we still, so we're not really reducing anything other than we're using electronics. Can you fill that in?
Representative, Mr. Chair, those are some of the questions we've been asking other states. The bottom line is that there are some requirements that have to be met that are in law, whether it's state or federal, and you're right, we are a state that has a number of requirements beyond what other states have. So those are some things that unless we have some changes in our state law or federal law, it's a requirement. You can't get around it. What we have found from other states is that by using technology, the process has been simplified. It has reduced the redundancy. Teachers are able to access information and not have to do what they do now. And I believe what we're hearing now is that they literally almost have to recreate the whole ongoing progress report of students. So what we have heard time and time again, and our next step is going to be to actually talk to teachers, that while you can't eliminate required processes and forms, you can reduce the redundancy and you can simplify the process and you can shorten that process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we set this up, and I know this is going to hit education finance at some point, set up these programs. I realize most schools' instructors are on computer now. Is there going to be a tremendous amount of cost to get this done and time? I'm thinking special ed directors especially, but teachers are going to be doing a lot of summer work, which maybe is, you know, to set it up, but is it going to take some time and what would the cost be?
Mr. Chair, that's one of the things we want to come back to you with, is a proposal to show that there are different phases. And it would be up to you to decide how far you want us to take it. I believe that we can probably do an electronic IEP, probably with the appropriation that is currently there. But if you want to go further, for example, the billing, that would probably be an addition. If you want to actually look into what are some of the interventions that have been used and looking at a results-based system, that's going to be another step. So what I think we would like to do is come back to you with a full-blown proposal that would show these are the different steps, and then you have some options in terms of how far. Other states have already taken it to the electronic IEP, are now in the process of taking it to the billing process, to the intervention process, and so they're just adding on to the system. It's what we call ongoing continuous improvement or addition to the system.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Swatsky. You and I had a conversation a couple times on this, and in no way, shape, or form am I out to destroy this bill. In fact, I commend you for what you're about to take on if this continues to go forward. This is a mammoth project, and everything that I'm going to ask here and look at, I hope that you take with the intent of making this better going forward, because I've been deeply involved with this. My first question is, right now out in the schools, and this would be for the department, there's already a number of software programs, the TIES program, the SPED forms, there's a number of them, so they're already using these. Are we now saying those no longer are valid. We're going to retrain all of these. What is our intent in doing this, and how about these vendors that have spent a lot of time putting these together?
Chair, Representative Kreshaw, thank you. And we have, I think this is a great opportunity. I think we're all speaking the same language. Mm-hmm. We want to have the best program that is effective, that is, I would love to see federal, the federal requirements, and we can stop there, Representative Keel. So, and yet do what's right by our students. So you're right. We do not have to reinvent the wheel, and I think that is unnecessary time and resources. I think we need to be efficient, fast. We have a crisis in the state of Minnesota in special education teachers, and this is one of the reasons. I do not think that we have time to waste. We need to do this effectively, efficiently, but full force ahead. And I welcome and I thank you for your comments about other states and the progress other states have made. There is no reason why we have to exclude. We need to include everybody and in this, because you're right, there are systems that maybe I've asked how many districts use, for instance, SPED forms. My district does not. Everybody else in my co-op does. But if that is a form that's being used across 80% of the state, let's tap into their resources. That's great. I mean, why do we have to reinvent the wheel? Let's do something that's effective, that people like, that people use, that is done right by the child and the families. So I am with you all the way.
And thank you, Chair Mariani. And so for a follow-up, so as I read your bill, and take this as a friendly advice, I don't think this bill is ready yet, and here's why. As I walk through it, we, well, let's go to page 3, line 3.21. In subdivision 2, section B, we now have changed it from assembling a group to consulting with a group. That's your key group to this. If you can get those folks together, almost like a task force or recommend, let them go out, find out the forms that are out there, find out what's working, and then come back, as the department has said, with a proposal to us. Right now it seems like we're doing it the other way around, and we may be moving too quickly. And just from experience, if you put this system together and it has a bumpy path and then throw it out there and try to implement it, imagine the stress on the special ed teachers. Imagine not only having all the requirements they have now, but also a system that they can't get help with. And then as I look at this also, where is the customer service part? Where is the where I pick up the phone, hey, this field isn't where it's supposed to be? I mean, this is mammoth. And so I understand the desire to be expedient, but shouldn't we balance that with the desire to do it right?
May I refer to council on referring to 3.21 and page 3, and then to 4.12? I agree with your comments. I don't think that, I'll rephrase that. Special education teachers are very very adaptable, very quick learners, and we need to depend on the department to teach us, train us. And but essentially, the major components are going to be there. We want to get rid of, and I think that's what part of this is to get rid of the things that are not mandatory and that we, from district level, but have to get the federal information there, the state information there, and then, and that's what we all know. Also, the other additional forms to reduce the redundancy with those forms, all of that would be created in within the paperwork. But is...
Ms. Larson, I think Representative Swatsky wants you to perhaps answer a question.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kreshaw, the first question you had was on 3.21, and you were asking about assembling a group versus consulting with. I think that was a change born of the desire, given the very, very tight timelines here, since this bill is going to judiciary, to avoid an additional trip the Governmental Operations Committee. That's the sum total of why that change exists. So the practical effect of it, at least in terms of the legislative process, was simply to avoid a stop at a committee.
Representative Christian.
And thank you, Chair Mariani. Thank you for that. And if our intent is to avoid stops and get this through quickly instead of doing it correct, that I think we're doing a huge disservice to all the teachers out there that are working very hard on this. And I'll address the bill author with this question. I think you need to look at putting that task force in place and not just consult with them, because as I read this, they could just pick up the phone and say, hey, what do you think, versus let's get in a room, let's work this through. And even in the legislator, the auditor's report, one of the key things they say is, we suggest MDE enlist local education authorities. Get out there, get that feedback, do this right.
And that's exactly the 10 different groups on page 3 that they would be referring with. Number 1 includes information technology specialists. Number 2, licensed special education teachers. 3, directors of special education. 4, related service providers. 5, third-party vendors. 6, a designee of the Commissioner of Human Services. 7, parents of children with disabilities. 8, representatives of advocacy groups representing children with disabilities. 9, representatives of school districts. And 10, special education cooperatives to create this. So I think we're using all of those entities.
And I appreciate and thank you, Chairman Ann. And I appreciate the conversation. And really, I'm trying to move this forward, because I do believe in what you're trying to do. And again, what I would ask, respectfully ask, is take a step back and make sure we do this right. It's that important. I've seen bumpy implementations. I put those in place. And I think it's some troublesome, and I hope you look at it as you move to other. But consulting worth versus assembling, for the sake of time, somebody could just run down a phone tree and say, yep, I consulted with them, and boom, those recommendations that may not be correct. I mean, you've been in special ed for a long time. I've trained these people. I've developed the software. This is a huge undertaking. And I question, to be honest, whether or not the department has the expertise, the knowledge, and the resources to do this in this short a time frame. So, and I'll stand for remarks.
Thank you, Representative Crescia. I think your comments are born from a desire to make sure that we get this.
No ill will.
I get that. We have Representative Barrett. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to follow up on a little bit about what Representative Crescia had said and a little bit about what Representative Leidiger was getting to, only the part that the special ed teachers didn't have a negative reaction to. But it really relates to doing this right. And
like they had an animated reaction.
Animated, thank you. Yes, wrong adjective. So I know a certain special ed teacher who gets up pretty early, and she leaves her home before 6, which is unfortunate because she usually wakes her husband up at that time, who doesn't want to get up at that particular point in the morning, and then gets home really late at night sometimes, you know, early evening and so forth. What's the likelihood that this will actually reduce the workload? And what is the likelihood then that will actually increase workload, both in the short term and the long term? Can you answer that for me?
And Commissioner, I believe you had referenced earlier that other states have been going down this road, so perhaps there's some body of information there that might help us with that question.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly what we want to do. We want to bring groups like this together. We want them to have the opportunity to talk to the 4 states that we've been talking to, ask those kinds of questions of the staff, of teachers. Thus far, what we've been told is that it does help with the procedure and the process. It does reduce it. It does assist with the transfer of information. But I think that it would be very helpful for a group such as this to also be able to hear from other states that have gone down this path. I think the intent is not to reinvent the wheel. We don't need to do that. I think there are systems out there that have been very successful. So the intent is not to reinvent the wheel.
Well, quick follow-up then. I'll just restate what everyone had said already. You know, this is really important, as you know. We don't want to irritate any special ed teacher, certainly ones that are near and dear to our hearts. So with that in mind, I just wish you the best on this, and let's do it right.
And before I get too far away from Representative Kreisha's question, we still have a couple questions, and then we have members of the audience who also wish to comment on the bill. But Representative Kreisha, and you heard Representative Sawatsky say she's with you on this. I think this is really critically important that we are together on this issue. And Commissioner, quite frankly, I think getting you on the record relative to what we're doing here with the change of the language about assembling versus consulting with the group, Representative Sawatsky went point by point with the different groups here, I think that's critically important. And again, it's not a question of intent, but I think it's a matter of making sure that we're on the record here as we're moving, you know, steadfastly forward, that in fact this doesn't just become a quick phone call and I called someone, but that there's some serious consulting that's happening here with the 10 groups. I see you nodding, Representative Kreisha, and I think what I'm hearing is you would be more comfortable with much more directive language, creating a task force. You know, we're a little nervous about what might happen, you know, with that, given, you know, the shortness of the session, but nonetheless, I think seeking an assurance on the record that there's a very serious, meaningful interaction here is what is the intent of the department in moving forward with this language. So, Commissioner, I guess I'm just asking you.
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative, I look at this list, and I think that we could probably create this list and representatives from this list as soon as possible and start the process of looking at how do we move forward. I think that the representatives that need to be here are those exactly that we need to be consulting with on an ongoing basis. There's nothing to prevent the department right now. We've already, you know, gotten feedback from just two impromptu, one of them was the previous task force that you just heard from. Then we brought another group of stakeholders in. There's nothing to prevent the department from looking at this list and making sure we have representatives from each of these categories and start the process of meeting on a regular, ongoing basis.
I think it's vitally important, and I also want to channel a little Representative Leidinger's earlier questions. I may not share those concerns, but I think one way in which we can avoid any kind of criticism of whatever comes out the end is going to be heavily dependent on the validity that comes out of a heavy consultative process. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, and just a quick comment, Chair Mariani. First of all, you're wise beyond your years with those comments, but secondly, as advice, when you seek that group, if you haven't entered, make sure you get the vendors. There's a number of folks that have done this, and the SPED folks, the TIEs, and find those, because they're very valuable to you.
I would just like to make a comment on that. We do need to be careful. If we do an RFP, then what you might end up doing is preventing those vendors, since they have an inside scoop already, from being able to bid on the contract. So we do need to be careful on that. Yes.
That's correct. Thank you for that. Representative Erdahl and then Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to interrupt the harmony of this meeting, so I'm not going to. I pass.
Representative Erdahl, you're usually the one that harmonizes us. So. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This goes to the Commissioner again. Two or three years ago, before my second career, when I was substitute teaching, there is often times in the spring that I would sub like all day for the special ed teachers, so they were getting caught up on their paperwork. I find it hard to imagine that we haven't known about this problem for a long time. In my district, it's a small district, and we hire special ed teachers with regular teacher licenses, and they take the job for two or three years to get themselves into the system, and then they get into a classroom just as soon as they can, and that's not good for training teachers, retaining teachers. I just think that if we sit this and lay it over for another commission to take another look at it, to assemble another committee, to try and find somebody that's going to bring it back to this Ed Policy Committee to start over. We're 6 months, we're a year down the road, we're into next session. I looked at the timelines. They don't seem for next year. It's a commercially made one available for the next three school years. The school districts may use the online system, and I'm sure that they're working on it. They're testing it. They're considering it, and ready to go in 2017-2018. You know, half the special ed teachers might be retired by then. And then we start. I see no benefit in delaying and not getting started with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Nornes, and then we'll ask members in the audience to come forward to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mostly just a comment. My wife was special ed for 32 years, and I know she would be supportive of this attempt. And I believe I might even be a co-author. I thought I signed on to this bill, but maybe not. Anyway, my intent would be to support it, but also to do it right. I mean, that's, I guess, what if we're going to do this, we need to take and do it right. So that's my only comment, that there is no other way to do it but right. So.
Indeed. Thank you, Representative Dornes. I'll invite folks from the audience to come forward who wish to testify on the bill. And I suspect we'll have 40 people come forward. Is that correct?
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
I appreciate the members of the committee for allowing me to speak. I'm Jill Scarvold. I am with Moorhead Area Public Schools, and I'm the executive director for Learner Support Services for the schools. And I appreciated the conversation and the meaningful conversation going on here, because the questions that came up are the ones that are of great concern to myself as along with my colleagues. I believe so strongly that we've got to reduce the burden of paperwork. It has to happen. I've been in this field since the beginning of IDEA, when it was known by a different name, and all of these years we've been talking about the burden of paperwork. But we need to do it cautiously, because right now I believe that this is not going to reduce the paperwork issue. It will address some of the other pieces, but it's not about reducing the paperwork. And we've got to pull together. I appreciate the comments about looking at a task force to do this. I've been fortunate enough to be a part of one of the other task forces that we heard from tonight, bringing together all the stakeholders that bring meaningful conversation to figuring out and finding a solution. I can guarantee you that I can take all of the requirements under IDEA and put it on one page. It's not going to reduce the paperwork burden or the workload issue for our teachers, because it's an issue of compliance. And we've got to be careful and address the right piece. So I want to make sure that we're, one, addressing paperwork and the burden of workload. That's first and foremost. I see too many people frustrated. Myself, in being in this field for years, the paperwork is inundating people, and it's taking time away from kids, which is where our teachers need to be. But we need to be landing on the right side of the answer. And that means bringing together the right people to have the discussions that were brought up, so that we can carefully construct what will happen with reducing. Creating the software, all of our districts that I'm aware of have software that we're using. None of us create extra paperwork to be done in unintentionally or just for the sake of doing it. But it's being done in order to answer the questions regarding compliance issues. You heard about the other states. I'm fortunate to be here in this state now, but I was in one of the other states in which we had a state format. Everyone was working on the same software. The difference, that state did not exceed federal requirements. And so the requirements that were in the paperwork were very different. I want to reduce the paperwork burden for teachers. I want to see that happen quicker than later. But we've got to pull together the people, the stakeholders, have the discussion. I know from, again, having the experience of being on one of the task forces from MDE, bringing together all the various people, we can come to some solutions. But right now, what's overwhelming and overburdening our people is having to do the minutiae of crossing the T's and dotting the I's. We've got to get to the part of being able to reduce that paperwork in a meaningful way. So I appreciated the conversation. I appreciated the cautionary piece because I believe very strongly in this. I want to see it done right. But I think that it goes back to pulling people together to a task force to not just address about a vendor or software, but address the process that's inherent and what's required of our teachers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scarborough. And I think there's good wisdom in your comments here. You know, often as legislators, we look for magic bullets, and you know, complex social policy don't lend themselves to single right. One-dimensional approaches. I think there's a lot of wisdom there, and I certainly would hope that the process of constantly convening and consulting with a diversity of stakeholders here would produce a very rich environment in which we can get at some of the tougher issues with this. I think it's good counsel. Thank you also for the long drive from Moorhead. I've done that drive many times. Never under these kind of weather circumstances. I understand you're here for a day of the Hill tomorrow, but nonetheless, thank you for being with us here this evening. Ike, you have a question for this witness?
I just wanted to say go Spuds. Thank you.
Thank you. We have another testifier. Please come forward. Good evening.
Good evening, Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing my voice to be heard tonight. My name is Rose Gephardt, and I'm a special ed resource teacher from Minneapolis. I've been teaching for 27 years. Most of those years have been with Minneapolis. I'm excited that this bill has been brought forward and that we're being proactive in addressing the huge paperwork burden that teachers do have, special ed teachers and related staff do have. All the time that teachers spend on paperwork takes away from the planning and for the implementation of quality instruction. We do a huge disservice to our most needy students because so much of our time is focused on paperwork and staying in compliance. I'm excited that this bill is talking about an online system that a system that can have multiple vendors talking to each other, a central one, for the purpose of looking at that redundancy, having to spend time answering questions on a prior written notice that I've answered five times before in another form. Just looking at bringing forward that committee, that group of stakeholders that can be objective and look at the redundancy that's out there. And streamlining would be huge. And for me, myself personally, and I know different teachers will have different viewpoints on this, but for me, that streamlining would include a goal bank of standard-based goals and objectives. I have a daughter who is new to the profession. This is her second year now. And it was interesting, she shared with me how her first perceptions of how shocked she was at the amount of paperwork, that nothing in her schooling prepared her for the amount of paperwork and the time that would involve. She was shocked at the importance that's put on the compliancy of that paperwork. And she said that she definitely gets a feeling that leadership is saying we put paperwork first and children second. That's why I'm so excited about this bill coming forward, and with the hope, the light at the end of the tunnel, that we can spend more time with students and less time with paperwork. And it's hard for me to separate the two of paperwork and caseload, but I know caseload is they're tied really closely. They're tied so closely. And I, through my years with the district, have had low caseloads and I've had high caseloads. And last year was one of the years for me with a very high caseload. I spent, and it's just not myself, we've done a lot of surveys and a lot of talking with the teachers in the district, but with that high caseload, I've spent every weekend probably 10 hours trying to keep up with that caseload to keep up with compliancy, because compliancy is going to be tied into my job performance and whether I have a job or not. So anything that can streamline and allow me to spend more time with a brand new grandchild, I'm on board, and I appreciate you bringing it forward.
Ms. Gephardt, you got a whole bunch of votes because there are a number of grandparents on this committee, including the chair. So thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your work with Minneapolis Schools. And please extend our gratitude to your daughter for also being part of our teaching professionals.
Thank you.
So, and then we have, actually, I don't know your name, so I'll have you come forward and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Dana Flanders-Turman. I'm a special education teacher at Centennial School District.
Good evening.
Good evening, and Mr. Chair and committee members and representative, thank you for spending time on this this bill. It was very important. I have been teaching for 30 years. I have this is my ending of my 30th year, and I have been 19 of those years I've been in Minnesota, and I noticed over the years that things have changed. Even just the last couple of years, I noticed that on these paperwork I need to get to teachers or parents is that I need to write down all the courses that this student will have taken in the high school level. I have to have that on the IEP. And I'm kind of confused as to why that's so, because that information can be found in a student transcript. So those are kinds of the redundancies that I'm talking about. And I think my colleagues behind me could speak to too. I think one of the main things here is we need to. I'm losing my voice, so aren't you glad? I think we need to keep in mind that we are communicating with our parents, and they need to, this needs to be understandable to them. And when I give them a 9 or 10 page IEP, they look at me, their eyes get all water, they go glassy and their jaws drop, and I know they look at me like I'm a nutty lady. When I do an initial or 3-year reeval, those can be upwards to 20, 25 pages long. And I just had an initial assessment the other day, and I talked to this parent, and I find myself apologizing. I apologize, and I do not read this word for word. I say, I will hit the highlights, and I'll say, take it home. If you have any questions, bring it back. We can talk some more. But when they give them that 20, 25-page report, I don't know if they get beyond that thick, pad of paper that I just gave them. So if we keep in mind that we're trying to communicate with parents, I think that will help us realize that we need to reduce the redundancies in our paperwork.
Very well. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you also for your work in Centennial. And we have another witness as well. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
My name is Diane Schultz. I'm a special education teacher in South Washington County. I've been teaching for 23 years. I'm here tonight to ask you to support this bill. This bill is not about eliminating critical pieces of information. It's about reducing The current requirements of reporting, submitting, repeating over and over multiple times in multiple documents. You've heard that a lot tonight. The redundancy magnifies the volume of our workload. We spend lots of time doing the same thing over and over. I think this bill would streamline that redundancy. This bill is needed because the reporting in special education is so significant. It takes time away from our teaching responsibilities, from time away from our students. As special educators, we want and need to spend as much time as possible with our students. I would ask you to please support this bill so that we can have more time to focus on instruction. Thank you for letting me speak tonight.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I haven't been asking for questions of the witnesses, but are there any questions for witnesses? If not, thank you for your work in South Wash. Good evening.
Good evening. Chair Mariani and members of the committee, I come as a slightly different breed of the people who have been at the microphone thus far. I am a speech-language pathologist, and I am here on behalf of the Minnesota Speech-Language Hearing Association. In the MSHA has asked me to come just to offer our association support of this bill, in that across the state we hear from a number of speech-language pathologists who have had increased caseloads over many years now, and within the contracted school day have difficulty fulfilling all of the due process documentation and paperwork which is required at this point. I work for the Bloomington Public Schools as well as for the Help Me Grow South Hennepin program through Bloomington Public Health. In Bloomington, we are staffed at a caseload of approximately 50 students per full-time speech-language pathologist. However, at MSHA, we hear from many outstate and metro districts that have much higher caseloads. I have the good fortune to work in a very supportive school district. Besides the evaluation paperwork, IFSPs, IEPs, prior written notices, and everything having to do with the due process, which my special education colleagues have spoken to at this microphone tonight, as a speech-language pathologist and sometime in some other special education professionals, we have the additional burden of completing state-mandated third-party billing, which has been referred to in brief here. Billing, which is required, but helps school districts capture health care funds to supplement the shortage of special education budgets. In Bloomington, this ranges from approximately 3 to 25 students per speech-language pathologist who must be third-party billed. And in those schools where there is a higher number of students who qualify under free and reduced lunch, then there are more students who qualify in general for third-party billing. Third-party billing requires a complete separate set of data collection and reporting that is not always integrated or included into the electronic programs, which you have heard to refer to tonight as far as due process. In Bloomington, we've done a time study, and it takes approximately 15 to 25 minutes per month per student to do just third-party billing, aside from all other due process paperwork. That amount of time doesn't sound significant. However, for 24 students on a caseload that need to be third-party billed, that's an additional 6 to 10 hours of just third-party billing for students receiving speech-language therapy. Additional to that is the time from students for report writing, meeting, completing due process work, if all done during the contract day, which I know is a core of the reason for this bill, is that anyone within the special education realm should be doing our special job of helping our special students achieve their specialness, and that would be in face-to-face contact. So if a unified, well-developed, free documentation system were implemented statewide that integrates the sharing of information across not only documents within electronic systems within a school district, but also across school districts in the state, important contact time with special education students would be less compromised. Additionally, there would be much less of a chance of a student's lapse in special education service in their IEP if they were to move from one district to another, a case which I have personally experienced numerous times where students move a mere few miles from a neighboring district into ours, and we have no idea they're on an IEP and they have lapses and sometimes more than just weeks of service, because everyone thinks the parent should just know to tell. But if we had a system that was integrated statewide, the instant they were enrolled in our district, we'd know they got services. Thank you for your time, and if there's any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for your work as well. Members, we've had a very, I think, a very good, thorough conversation here. Representative Sawatsky, you're right. Very complex issues that we can spend much more time on. I want to, again, commend the task force for spending that kind of time in recent months. And I want to also thank the members for the very thoughtful challenges and conversations here today, or this evening, rather. With that, Representative Sawatsky renews her motion that House File 2568, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Thank you all, visitors and testifiers. It's good to be working hand-in-hand with our citizens and the public. Members, we stand adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.